All right, so I'm Bronwyn. I'm from Philadelphia. What I usually do with all my time is teach critical thinking in English classes at a community college. So that's where I spend the bulk of my time. And we're going to discuss the complicated, how complicated self-determination is as something to define. And I'm not going to necessarily provide answers or complete definitions of self-determination, but just to look at different definitions that people have used, which ones seem to go against an anarchist tradition or along with an anarchist tradition, and how we can think about, especially as anarchists in the United States working on self-determination, here, which seemed, especially after some of the other talks I've been to, it seems like there really is a need to think about what self-determination, like that we really don't have, we have a lot of problems with self-determination in the United States. But I thought it'd be interesting to start off with this quote from Eduardo Galeano, and this is from Open Veins of Latin America. So, is Latin America a region condemned to humiliation and poverty? Condemned by whom? Is God, is nature to blame? The oppressive climate, racial inferiority, religion, customs, or may not as plague be a product of history made by human beings and so unmakeable by human beings. And the reason I chose this as a quote to get started with is for a discussion of self-determination is because I see a couple of like interesting trends in there. On the one hand, it's sort of hopeful, right? And it reminds me a little bit of Hart and Negri's sort of definition of self-determination in empire, that if history, I mean, he uses some interesting, it raises some interesting questions. Have a lot of people read Open Veins of Latin America? Okay. And it's a book about devastation and oppression and destruction and sort of the destruction of self-determination in a lot of ways. And so there's a sense that the book is very hopeless, right? That self-determination is often out of people's control. Right? Mm-hmm. Galeano uses examples over and over again of, say, people who, miners, who are basically born into working in mines, and they die by the time they're 30 from black lung, right? And so if you look at something like that, I would say, where is the self-determination there, right? It's pretty much a predetermined type of existence that people are brought into. And then there are other. I mean, Galeano is sort of a Marxist, I think. So he's looking at other things. It's, you know, there are natural forces that can maybe work against self-determination. Like stuff that's going on with all these hurricanes right now could be a force that would create problems with self-determination. God is something that many people see as a force that suppresses self-determination because things are sort of predetermined by God or outside of your hands. He brings in other questions about our customs, you know, like supposedly outdated customs or those things that cause people problems. And then he sort of asks like this question that reminds me of Marx's from the 18th Brumaire, where he talks about man makes history, but not of his own. Yes. And it's sort of a little bit, you know, asking that question. Like these are things that maybe man doesn't, you know, has limited choices in, and that can sort of suppress self-determination. But then there's the question at the end that is hopeful, you know, and it is hopeful today because we're not robots and. If we were robots, we wouldn't have self-determination at all. And it also, I think, raises some interesting anarchist questions because, especially I took some theoretical inquiry workshop at ISC this summer, and there seemed to be a lot of discussion that anarchists have a lot of emphasis on free will and desire and self-determination. But to me, that sometimes can be unsympathetic towards people who are in very in conditions that where self-determination is limited. And so I find myself sometimes going back and forth between these anarchist principles and maybe more of a Marxist sense that there are conditions that are outside of people's control, material conditions, guns, money, the law, that people really have limited control over. Or that, and again, I'll get back to this, but that can be an arguable thing too, I think. And when I look at some of the definitions of self-determination, I'll kind of get back to that. The reason I got interested in this subject was because I work with this anti-war group in Philadelphia, and within the group are Maoists, there are Solidarity, Socialists, there are anarchists, there are Democrats, there are Marxist-Leninists, right? And I kept noticing that people were constantly using the word self-determination. And in other groups I've worked with, you know, who are doing stuff around Palestine and so forth, that it's just kind of thrown out there all the time. And yet, for me, a Maoist who's a good friend of mine, she defines self-determination as sort of the self being subsumed, like the I being subsumed in the we. Right, and so that's very, very different from the way I would define self-determination. And Leninists might define self-determination more in terms of like national self-determination. And so I started thinking about all the conflicts between the ways in which self-determination is described, and the fact that we don't really discuss it enough. Maybe that it's just sort of assumed that we all agree, I think, sometimes on what self-determination is. And so I started thinking about it from more of a definition of the self, actually. And so I started, you know, because I'm an English teacher, I looked up the dictionary definition of self-determination, which I think we don't have to agree with. This is from the New World Dictionary, but it's an interesting way to start, I think. And I realized that there were some real problems with just with this. So, I mean, self-determination, these are in conflict with each other, and in many ways, I think these are almost virtually impossible constructs, right? Like, the determination or decision according to one's own mind or will with outside influence, I think, is just a bizarre notion. Because it's almost like trying to separate the yolk from the white of the egg, right? How do you know how you came to be who you are? It's not as if, you know, you're in a closet and you become this fully formed person with free will and then you get out of the closet and, you know, do that. So that's problematic in and of itself, right? And there, like, I guess my tendency is, as a human being, is to really emphasize human singularity. I can't experience what you've experienced, you can't experience what I've experienced. And I would rather valorize that maybe than notions of free will and individuality, because I think they're very philosophically are just really problematic. Whereas I think human singularity is a very beautiful thing. It's human difference, but I think individuality and free will are in some ways not really philosophically completely tangible even to look at. And then the second definition, the right of a people to decide upon its own political status or form of government with outside influence, I would say, especially today in the age of globalization, that's virtually impossible too. So looking at both of these definitions, I think there are already like a lot of conflicts with them, like philosophical issues with them. And what I had started thinking through, and again, this is because I'm an English teacher, was there's have people heard of Henry James? Right. Henry James. He's a famous American novelist who's very sort of dense to read. But there's this beautiful section in his book, The Portrait of a Lady, which is a specific. It's sort of a discussion of self-determination, but there are also all these outside forces that are kind of imposed on us. I was going to read an example of this, but I think it's too long and it will take up too much time, so I'm going to move on from that. So I wanted to first start to talk about some different definitions of from different sort of activist or political groups, how they might define self-determination differently. And just because this definition, again, isn't necessarily plausible doesn't mean that it's not something we shouldn't strive for or work for. And some of the stuff that I was looking at was kind of interesting. Rosa Luxemburg, she had this conflict with Vladimir Lenin over Norway's secession from Sweden. And part of the argument was that Norway, they got national self-determination and they seceded from Sweden, but then they promptly decided they'd have a king, right? And so, and this is, I think, an anarchist problem too, because it's, how do you know what desire is? Like, maybe there are places where they want a king, right? And so it was a conflict for Lenin, because he was saying, well, they just don't know because they don't know any better, right? And we need to tell them what they need. And I think what's good about anarchism is that we try to avoid that to the extent that I think popular for activists, but it's surprisingly similar to, I think, the views that a lot of activists have about self-determination. And it's basically been written over and over and over again in the UN. The UN has had all of these meetings around the issue of self-determination. It was Woodrow Wilson in this sort of like kind of New World Order democracy for everyone sentiment after the First World War was pushing for these sort of universal declarations of the right for the principle of self-determination. And so, like some of the things that are said are that it's welcoming the progressive exercise of the right to self-determination by peoples under colonial, foreign, or alien occupation and their emergence into sovereign statehood and independence. You know, they want to reaffirm the importance for the effective guarantee and observance of human rights, right? So within the UN definition in and of itself, there are even though in principle it sounds like a good idea, it is kind of a utopian fantasy because it's not actually happening. I mean, the UN really doesn't. It does some things to for human rights, but not obviously enough. Obviously, you know, self-determination isn't being respected in a majority of countries around the world. And then there's a sort of democratic definition of self-determination, more of a centralized state, and that would, you know, be national self-determination, and that would satisfy the needs of people according to whoever was centralizing things. And just getting back to the Luxembourg-Lenin thing for a minute. I mean, what Lenin's reply to Rosa Luxemburg was that, well, and he had a whole, you know, as people probably know, he had wrote a whole lot about national self-determination. I mean, that was a really big, not all of it bad, but, you know, a lot of it. But his claim was that systematic propaganda campaigns must be carried out, right? That was how self-determination would be enforced, right? So there's a real conflict, right? Just as the UN is somehow going to enforce human rights in places, like there's a conflict there between enforcing something and the self resisting being enforced. And then anarchists, I think, argue, and the reason I'm an anarchist is because it seems like a healthier way of looking at the world than some of this stuff. But anarchists are against against propaganda, which is problematic sometimes, I think, because often, like especially around issues related to Iraq, I think people, a lot of anarchists that I know, especially in Philadelphia, have avoided working on issues related to Iraq because they don't want to be propagandistic. They don't want to tell people what they should think. They don't want to say what... They don't want to take, like, a party line type of thing, I think. And so a lot of it, what I've seen is, like, people being very critical of groups like ANSWR and other groups, but not providing, like, alternatives. At the same time, a lot of times I'll hear anarchists saying, well, we want self-determination for the people of Iraq. But I'm not sure that saying that, like, I think it feels good to say that. I think it sounds like a moral, ethical thing to say, but I don't think it actually changes anything. And then again, the Maoist thing would be that self-determination is sort of conformity to mass desire, right? And then an ANSWR type of thing might be that everybody who's against the United States is working on self-determination, and therefore we should support them against the United States, which I think is kind of a ridiculous goal. So some of the other things that come into play with self-determination is, and this raises questions for anarchists too, I think, is economics. Self-determination is basically, I think, impossible without some kind of control over necessary economic resources. How to have distribute economic resources or be in control of economic resources without a state is I think, an issue that anarchists are thinking a lot more about maybe than before, but I think that's a problematic issue also. And just a couple examples of that. Some examples of what I see as sort of bigger movements of self-determination, like in Bolivia and Brazil, maybe. In Brazil, and I know maybe because people aren't so into electoral politics, but it took Lula, I think, for something like 40 years to get into power. And mostly the people who voted for him were poor and destitute people. And so to me, that's an act of national self-determination where people, despite ethnic, religious, or other conflicts, are still coming together to determine their lives, even if it's like an electoral politics type of thing. But already Lula's lost his popularity for good reason, because he's not doing the things that he said he was going to do. Surprise, but I don't entirely. I mean, I don't think it's because he doesn't want to necessarily. I think it's because of globalization. It's virtually impossible to do, right? And so that kind of gets back to this definition of, right? Like, if we're talking about self-determination, I think we have to be honest about it. Like, is that even really a possibility anymore? National self-determination, like. Is it really possible for one nation not to be have outside influences that are determining how they're going to do things? Or in Bolivia, where people took to the streets in this big national self-determination, or it might not even be national, but they took to the streets to kick Bechtel out and to take back the control of their water. They're now being sued by Bechtel for, you know, millions of dollars, right? So even though they made this great movement, people took to the streets, acted together in concert, right? In a way, it's always stopped short by something, right? And it isn't able to continue. And I think that's gotten worse, obviously, than it was before. And then we have this sort of. Are people familiar with Empire, the Hartin Negri book? Well, I guess and I don't know if people agree with me on this, but I guess my take on their definition of self-determination is that if things are the way they are now, it's because we've desired them to be that way. That kind of is something I think that's important to look at in the United States. And I think they're going against Marx in saying that, because I think Marx would say that there are these material conditions that people are born into and they haven't determined how their lives are going to be. And I think Hart and Negri are taking this kind of like delusion sense of desire and force and saying, well, just because things are fucked up doesn't mean we didn't go along with it, right? And in a way, like, that gets back to the Galeano thing, because he's asking, like, did we make history? Like, have we allowed things to get to the point where they are now? And there's something both hopeful and unsympathetic about that. I mean, it's hopeful because it says that human beings have agency, and that, well, maybe if we got ourselves into this mess, right, we can also get ourselves out of this mess. But I think it's also a problem. And in the United States, sorry if I'm rambling a little bit here. In the United States, that's That's something I think a lot about because I teach college students, and I see that they're that in many ways, in terms of politics and things like that, people aren't so involved and people don't care so much, and people are maybe more interested in culture or in shopping or things like that. And so that raises question about, well, maybe we have allowed things to become the way they are. And sometimes I get tired of people just always bashing Bush because I think it's kind of our fault as a country, right? And that to focus on just a couple of people doesn't make much sense. And that we need to confront that. We need to confront that in the United States there are a lot of people who maybe this is how they've self-determined things, right? Maybe they like the way things are, right? And maybe that in terms of the Hart and Negri proposal, that's been the force of desire. Maybe that's where desire has led people, right? And I think that raises a question for anarchists, because if we disagree with that and we say that no, that's not desire, like desire is, you know, being in collective situations, mutual aid, helping other people, it shouldn't be so oriented around money, it shouldn't be so oriented around television or shopping or things like how do we convey that to people without being like the bossy Marxist-Leninist, right? Without saying, well, you're wrong, you don't know how to live, right? And we're going to tell you how to do it because we really know, and you really don't. And I'm going to, you know, it gets sort of like into Christian missionary kind of work or something. You know, I'm going to enlighten you about how to determine your own life. So I think that's a further complication. And what else? I mentioned in I think in the pamphlet thing that sometimes too self-determination I think is used as where it's convenient, right? It's used as a convenient term, like with Trotsky, with the takeover of Georgia by the Soviet Union. I think it was used because he was against the self-determination of the people of Georgia. And with Kronstadt or other things like that, where people were sort of abandoned by communists and socialists, and it's like, well, self-determination is convenient here, right, in this situation. But now that you're going up against this, and I think what did Trotsky say? He said, we do not only recognize, but we give full support to the principle of self-determination wherever it is directed. Feudal capitalist and imperialist states, but wherever the fiction of self-determination, which again is a strange thing because you're telling somebody else their self-determination is a fiction, in the hands of the bourgeoisie becomes a weapon directed against the proletarian revolution, we have no occasion but to treat this fiction differently from other principles of democracy perverted by capitalism, right? And so I think anarchists try really hard to avoid that kind of talk again, but then that creates problems too, because then we're not necessarily articulating something, because we want to kind of avoid the bossy anarchists, or most of us do, not everybody. We want to avoid the I don't know what I call the Jason McGuinn bossy anarchist thing, like you really don't love your family, and you really you really need to break. It's sort of Nietzschean, like, you know, all institutions are bad, and you know, you don't know what you really desire, and until you strip away all these things, you're not going to be a true person or something kind of stuff. And I think I have about 5 minutes left. So I was going to talk about what are some of the things, just in terms of self-determination, in terms of thinking about it in the United States. You know, like I was really struck by the panel yesterday on international solidarity work, and how there is an emphasis on, you know, giving mutual aid and giving support to people in other countries, but also like really working on what's going on here in the United States. And I think that certain things are really obvious to people. Democracy isn't working, right? It's not true. The principles are incredibly flawed. Human rights is, which is supposed to be a democratic principle, obviously isn't with the prison system, with immigration stuff, obviously isn't being respected. So what can we do about that? I mean, if these things are, I mean, I think we first need to identify what the issues are. Like, instead of asking what is self-determination, maybe say, what are the things that are blocking self-determination, or what are the things that don't allow people to determine themselves, and kind of look at it that way. That's for me, like, a way you can look at it in a more tangible sense. And I mean, I always think about this too in terms of teaching and students and stuff. And like right now, we're using, I think the thing that the Free Society Collective started is maybe a good example, the don't just vote, get political thing of expressing ideas of what self-determination means, or what direct democracy could look like, and how people locally and in the United States could work on the fact that we aren't necessarily determining how our lives are. And I know, like, in classes that I teach, students are doing these research projects on, they came up with their biggest beefs, and the biggest one was textbooks. It's a community college, the students are poor, and textbooks are like $600 to start this semester, which is just, it's ridiculous. And they know that they just changed like 3 pages in the textbook to make a new edition, and the teachers tell them they can't buy the old edition, they have to have the new edition. So to them, that's like a really big thing, right? And it's upsetting for teachers too, because you have half the class that doesn't have the books, and so you have to repeat stuff. You make copies for people. You try to deal with it. So they're looking at ways to sort of self-determine textbooks, right? Like, how, and at first they were kind of thinking like, well, oh, you can't do that. We're fucked by the textbook industry. It's so outside of our control, and there's nothing you can do about it. But when they started working, like, sort of on smaller groups together, they really got into it, and now they're coming up with all these creative ideas of how to subvert the Barnes & Noble bookstore, and how to do book swaps and all this other stuff. And so sometimes I think smaller local things like that, even though they may not seem like huge revolutionary things, but that they can actually give people tangible realizations of self-determination, are things that we kind of need to open up more. And a lot of people already are doing stuff like that, but that we need to kind of look at more in the United States. So that's one thing, focusing more on self-determination here. How is this not democracy? Like, how have visions of freedom changed historically in the United States? Like, in terms of looking through history, was freedom defined differently by people in the 1950s than it's defined now? And then looking specifically at things now that people associate with freedom. Like, I know a lot of people associate shopping with freedom, like you can buy what outfit you want to buy or something. And I don't really get mad at people for doing that, because most, you know, I mean, most of my students, like, work hard, go to school, and, like, you know, you shop because you have desire and you want to get something. And but just kind of looking more maybe at cultural things like that. Another thing that I think is important is this thing that Frederick Jameson calls cognitive mapping. And looking, like, historically and at things now. He wrote this really, really good essay. I think it's in a Marxism book. On Detroit in the 1970s when the auto workers were there. And it's a really, I think, good example of self-determination, because the auto workers were taking control of the automobile factories. The unions were really, really strong. They were involved with student groups at the college who were writing articles about what was going on in the factory. Churches were involved. So it was almost like the city of Detroit, for a very, very short period of time, became this kind of like self-determining kind of force. And then, of course, it was beaten down, and, you know, the newspapers shut down and people were thrown in jail and so forth. But I think it's good to look historically at places like that, and then to look at places where that's happening now. And some other examples from students who are in classes. Again, a lot of them live in very, very poor communities, but One of the things they've been looking at is how people are already doing things that are kind of self-determining, like if people, you know, if their neighborhoods aren't being cleaned up by the city, they're cleaning them up themselves, so they're getting together. I was amazed by the number of people who have this kind of, it's not like a real organized thing, but they babysit for each other all the time, like because people don't have money for babysitters. So kind of like looking at, like celebrating things like that are already happening. And what was the... and also that, like, I think it really requires a firmness of purpose, self-determination. And I think sometimes, like I think anarchists almost get embarrassed, like, that their ideas are corny or something, and that... that people will think they're silly. I mean, this is just something I've noticed from working, and that they can share them among themselves, right? Like in groups where they're with familiar other people, but they wouldn't necessarily share them with people outside of that community that they're in. Or maybe get involved with something somebody else is already doing that's sort of outside. So I think there needs to be more of a firmness of purpose in terms of people like going outside of, and I know people are already thinking about this, but going outside of anarchist circles and not being like kind of, because I go through this myself in class, like about, like I'll say, oh, should I talk about this thing I've been working on as an activist in class, or will students think it's like goofy or something? And then sometimes I'll just be like, nah, I'll just tell them. And usually they actually find it really interesting and kind of exciting, and sometimes students will want to write for the paper or come check out the new IMC space and stuff like that, and they're actually really interested in stuff. And so sometimes I think getting over like that type of thing is also kind of important. Thank you.